Fan.
I love it, baby.
Woo. Wild.
No way!
Oh, oh my God.
Yes!
I always love that one.
The game is over.
Sorry, Bob.
Amen, brother!
Far away.
Bullseye!
Nordo in for PA. It's vocal maintenance week. It's a Vikings bye week. We'll get to the Timber Tech set list momentarily. But Ryan Carter in studio with me for the first two segments. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great. Yeah, thank goodness I had all summer to rest my voice. I didn't have to take any time off here, especially after that last Wild game. It was exciting, though, but no, good to see you, man. How have you been?
I've been fantastic, and I'm even better watching this hockey team underway. And you mentioned it. You needed all summer to figure out how you were going to set the scene for the other night in that home opener. How fun was that?
Well, it was awesome. That game had a little bit of everything. I mean, it had the fight, the Superman punch, some lead changes, and obviously the turned over empty net goal, comeback, OT win. It was awesome.
How many times, I guess maybe it's tough, maybe, how many times did you fight in your career?
Oh, boy, a lot. Probably 30.
Okay. Well, I think Foligno's on track to fight 30 times this season. He's done it twice already, right? Didn't he in Anaheim?
Yeah, well, the trouble is he might become too valuable to have to spend a couple minutes in the penalty box. He's got a couple goals, too. So, I mean, he's cashing in.
That is interesting. And when you were fighting, or if you're Foligno, did he watch like a GSP fight, or how did he come up with the idea that he was just going to go full Superman at somebody?
Yeah, I don't know. I'd love to chat with him. I haven't seen him, but I think maybe it's possible that he just got so jacked up in the moment, the crowd, everybody back there. I think they played a spirited first couple, minutes too. So up until that point. And then I think it just maybe just blacked out and went for it. Just looked like a good idea and tried it.
So I remember when Foligno first came to Minnesota, and it was just kind of, it's like, okay, this is meat and potatoes. This is a guy that's, he's a glue guy, a guy you absolutely need. Certainly not going to rely on him for whether it's a power play goal or a goal with 7.5 seconds remaining in a game. You're not going to rely on him for those sorts of things. To the point, I remember I wrote notes for PA. We did a Vox in the box, and he's in the penalty box, and we knew nothing about him. And PA is on this, he came from Buffalo. And so it's like, Buffalo sucks. Yeah. Buffalo's the absolute worst. And I'm like air traffic control guy behind, he's from Buffalo. Let's cool it up. and thankfully, Foligno handled it well. But I think about from that time first meeting him as just he was kind of he was a guy. And hopefully he fits well within what the team's doing to now. I mean, he's like he's the shaman. He's the leader of this team in some capacity, and I think his evolution is really cool to think about since he's arrived.
Oh, yeah, you're absolutely right. When he came, I think you can look at it, and it was when the Wild were in the West, and it was Granlund and Zucker and some of these guys, and whenever they got beat out of the playoffs, it was, hey, they're not big enough. They're not strong enough. We need the response physically. We get pushed around when the games matter. And then eventually they go out, they trade, they get Marcus. And you're right. I think his role was entirely just to be a physical force, maybe play fourth line minutes. And if somebody happens to go out in a playoff game or when it matters and rub one of your guys, you have a chat with them and maybe you fight a couple times a year. Well, that in come Dean Evason, right? And give Dean a lot of credit because he wiped the slate clean for a lot of these guys and said,
yeah,
you're all good players. That's why you play in the NHL. There's opportunity out here. Go earn it. And I think that's part of the reason why Parise and Suter are gone, too. Like, it was, hey, you guys are actually good players. We're not just going to give minutes to certain people because of their contract or other things. Go out and earn it. And Marcus has done a phenomenal job going out and earning it. He's got a ton of confidence. He's got the letter on his chest. So, now he's, like you mentioned, he's on the power play. He's killing penalties. And that's where it started. He started killing penalties, earned some minutes there, did well. Goes out this year or last year, scored unbelievable shooting clip. Like he shot at like 27%. I don't think that he can repeat that, although he's off to a pretty good start. He's off to a good start. His ascension's been fun to watch and good for him because he's a guy that's kind of breaking the mold from a tough guy, heavyweight, fourth line guy to breaking through all of that and able to score some goals and set a new role for himself.
I think when Chuck Fletcher was here, there were certainly many things that he should be credited for in terms of, you know, the playoff appearances and what he did to help elevate this franchise. And many good moments at times, he moves on. But now with Bill Guerin, it kind of feels like if I'm a player in that room, and maybe it's like a Spurgeon or even a Dumba, where I've been here long enough now, where Bill Guerin just kind of rolls in, and it's almost like shock treatment.
Right.
In some ways, where I could never imagine Chuck Fletcher in a team meeting, you know, hey, Cap, you know, what are we trying to do here? Well, we're going to play hard and we're going to enjoy ourselves. And Chuck Fletcher's like, no, this is about effing winning.
Right.
I can't imagine Chuck, and Chuck's a great dude, and I've met him many times, and I think he's in Philly now, right?
Correct, yep.
Yeah, but with Guerin, the shock treatment in such a very short period of time, meshing some of the old standards and the mainstays of a Spurgeon, now a captain, Dumba, mentioning him again, but some of the guys that have made that transition and stuck around in combination with some of these new kids, it's kind of been fun, you know, I guess, amazing, or I don't know how to articulate it really, just how quickly Guerin has put his stamp and really changed the entire culture of the team.
Yeah, I think, I do think Fletcher and their camp wanted to win and wanted to do everything they could to win. It was just a different style. And as you mentioned it, Bill Guerin comes in and he just demands it and expects it. And he's a presence in the room. And, you know, he targets. I don't know if that was on purpose or not. The video clip you're speaking of where he addresses the team.
Yeah.
He picks out Spurgeon, the captain. If that's on purpose, don't know. But he says, hey, why are we here? And Spurgeon says the token. To have fun and to play well. And he's like, no, buddy, you are absolutely wrong. We're here to win. But then he goes and walks the walk, right? So if you're not playing to win, and if you're not going in the right direction, there's no room for you here, right? So that everybody falls in line. And I think you don't have to look too far down the lineup to see some of that culture shift changing and how it's making the team better. I think a perfect example would be Kevin Fiala, right? So yeah, he's a guy that they lean on offensively. There's no question about it. He's got the skill set. Can he do it consistently? That's the question. But what does he think about? What's he trying to do the offseason? He's coming in and says, hey, listen, I want to maybe try to kill some penalties. I want to get my play away from the puck better. And he's pushing for that. And he's had some minutes on the penalty kill, which he hasn't had in the past. So all of a sudden you see the culture shift like, man, if I'm going to be like Marcus and earn more minutes, I got to do more.
Yeah.
And by forcing all of these guys to see that and reward the people that are doing more and getting more minutes, it's forcing everybody else to do more, and there the floor is raising.
No, and that's a really big deal and a good point that you make. Now, with the change in the style, and it feels good, but super small sample size. You go beat on a couple of teams that you beat on last year, and then now you get this first one. It's like, and you could tell even through the first period, I was talking with Russo about this yesterday. It's like, okay, it's 2-2 at the end of one. Obviously, both teams are going to tighten up, slow it down, and it's just going to be a slog to try and get over the finish line, punch one in late, and get 2 points. Now, that's completely rekindled the vitriol, and it's just flying down the ice. Both teams really look fantastic. Hellebuck was, it looked like he was better at times. Ultimately, they both, I think, gave, yeah, he gave up five, but with Cam Talbot as well, not his best effort, nails and OT, but the style and the change through three, it's different, but is it better in the context of what you want to accomplish in this division and what you hopefully want to accomplish in the playoffs?
I think so. I think what was kind of magical about last season, they were underdogs. Nobody picked them to be as good as they were. How can they play? And to come back, play hard, have a belief in themselves. And that's really the core of the strength of this team right now is how much they just kind of believe that they're never out of a game, that they can do it, and that they're good enough to win in any situation. And then to rekindle that early this season, you know, they've had a couple comeback wins in California, fell behind both times. No, that's not a recipe that you want to duplicate 82 times, right? Like, you'd like to get out and win a couple easy ones here and there.
Yeah.
And close it out. It's certainly been exciting, and I think that's probably something that's being said in that room is, hey, let's not make it so hard on ourselves. Let's feel free to go blow somebody out, right? But the fact that they've refound that feeling, that belief in themselves early on, Winnipeg, I think they were super excited to play somebody that wasn't in the Pacific, that wasn't San Jose, L.A., one of these guys, and you get back to the Winnipeg Jets, let's go, have fun, crowd 18,000. So, yeah, I think everybody was juiced, but for them, I think it's absolutely critical that they found that belief in themselves again, that, hey, we are a good club and we can do this early on.
You know, I was thinking about it. So last night watching the Wolves game, and the Rockets are just putrid. But it's a good way to start the season if you think about the Wolves, consummate non-playoff team. And we haven't gotten to see everybody playing healthy together and all of those things. But you get a nice little punching bag to open the season and you blow out the Rockets the way they did. But Anthony Edwards, young kid, comes in as a rookie a year ago. It's 2,000 people in seats here. It's nobody in the arena here and there. Weird year, pandemic. We all lived through it. Last night, we just watched a showman. I mean, he at 20 years old or however old he is, he's out there playing to the fans. Like, nobody, I don't think anybody on this planet is happier to see full buildings and arenas than that kid with the big smile, the jump shots working, unbelievable athleticism. He's incredible. Kirill Kaprizov getting his opportunity to play in front of a true full building again the other night. That had to be big for him.
Yeah, I think it was big for them. And I think, well, I tell you what, I think from the player's perspective, what they learned is how valuable the fans actually are. I think at times you can be taken for granted and you see the token stick tap, the raise,
oh, yeah,
as they go down the tunnel. And it's like, thanks for showing up, guys, right? And we're going to go back and do our thing as players.
But that's kind of the hockey personality, too.
Yeah.
Like, you guys are a little reserved, a little modest. Yeah.
But I think there was genuine, gratitude for the fans for coming out, for supporting them. As they went out for their lap after that game against Winnipeg, it was genuine. They're like, man, we're back. This is fun. This is good. And, again, I think that goes into part of the reason, like Marcus Foligno with the Superman punch and the way that game went, they were playing it up and they felt the energy in the building and they were thankful. And, the 18,000 in there, I think, helped them win that game, right? So, yeah, absolutely. And for these guys to play on that, I don't think Kirill's off to the start maybe he would want, but I think having that fan base and having a taste of what that was like could spark him into finally getting going.
Okay, let me finish that thought on Kaprizov, then we'll break and continue on the Wild here. He's got 5 assists through 3 games.
Right.
Now, 3 of them came the other night, and you get a hat trick from Erickson Ek and all of that. He probably needs to shoot more or maybe just be more selfish, which is kind of an odd conversation. At least from my standpoint, through 3 games, many things could be different even as quickly as Saturday when we host the Ducks. I think he looks fantastic for the most part. He needs to battle through the physical aspects of the game because he's going to be paid a lot of attention to and all of those things. So I want him to score 50 goals for this team, but in the same sense, like, the playmaking ability is out of this world with this kid. And part of the attention he was getting was allowing a guy like Erickson Ek to chill out and take the garbage out en route to 3 goals, right? So, I mean, I don't know what, you know, we want him on the score sheet, but I think he's still, he looks fantastic, I think, through 3.
Yeah, no, and that's not to say that he hasn't been playing well, right? But I think, and what a luxury that is to have 5 points through three games or whatever it is, and for people to say, like, man, you can be better, right?
Yeah.
And that's the expectation. It's set
higher. Point.
And that's part of the reason why he got the big ticket, right, is because he needs to be that guy. But I think when you watch the game as a whole, a player like that, and we saw it at times last year, where he can just take it over, right, and he can control everything that's going on out there. Haven't seen that yet. And he can literally put the team on his back, shift momentum in just his 60 seconds on the ice.
And that's why you pay him $9 million,
right,
to do that.
Right, and haven't
that's
seen
good,
that yet.
That's a great point.
Haven't seen that yet, right? But he's still scoring, and that's where, again, that's what special players do, right? They continue to produce quietly, but then all of a sudden they have their moments and their big moments, and they kind of set the trajectory of your club. And I think he's getting there. Right.
Yeah.
And that's part of it. And that he's, let's not forget too, he's only had last year 55 games. So he's at what, 58 games NHL experience.
Right.
And he's getting $9 million man attention.
Yeah.
Right. And he's going to have to learn that. And it might take a little bit of time, but, once he gets to that spot where he's ready to take it over.
I mean, it's one shift a game. If you think about it, right. If there's one shift where he's magical,
right,
per game, that potentially is a point. That's a goal. That's something that is elevating your franchise every single night. That's a great point. I didn't think of it that way. Ryan Carter, Bally Sports North, White Bear Lake's finest, former Maverick. Might get into that, actually.
Horns up.
Horns up. Dryden McKay up. Are you kidding me? I think he tied the national shutout record in the NCAA, didn't he?
Yeah, he's going to beat it this year for sure.
Oh, yeah. He's going to run up the score. It's fantastic. We might get into that next segment. I think Hockey Day Minnesota is in Mankato this year, but we will continue on the Minnesota Wild. Bally Sports North at Ryan_Carter22. Is that accurate?
It is.
Hell yeah. Follow him on Twitter like we do. 9 to noon, TimberTech set list. Kind of potpourri today. Johnny Athletic's going to join me around 9:40. The Timberwolves handled business last night, and it was an awful team, but loved what we saw. Burke Bit Weekly, 9 to noon. He's in at 10. Ryan Burns and the Gophers hosting Maryland this weekend. He's in studio at 11. Nordowin for PA, and an opportunity every hour to win $1,000. Take it away, Brett.
That's right. The Fan, along with Paul Bunyan Plumbing and Drains, are trying to put a grand in your hand with our national cash contest. Text the keyword work, that is work, to 200-200 to enter. Standard text message and data supply. More 9 to noon with Ryan Carter next.
Fan.
Come see us 3 hours before every kickoff for Vikings pregame on the Plaza, presented by Shields. Each week, use hashtag KFANVikes for your shot to be Rube of the Game and win a $100 gift card thanks to Shields.
Lowry back for Stanley. Huge save. Stanley with a great shot. A big save that time by Talbot. Back the other way, Minnesota. 3-on-1. Kaprizov moves in back across. They score! Eric Zinek with the game winner.
We are your home for Wild Hockey, the Fan. Your television home for Wild Hockey, Bally Sports North. And the gentleman you're going to see most of the time throughout the 2021-2022 season, next to Anthony LaPanta, is Ryan Carter, who's in the studio. When you work with Anthony, is there like an unspoken rule, or is there etiquette? Like, how do you handle in a big spot overtime situation, like Eck in the moment, and I think it was Kaprizov that throws it across to him, like not freaking out, allowing him to hit the crescendo, hit the high note, and then you can go full Minnesota, former NHLer, hockey Rube on it, and pump up the moment.
Yeah, no, that's a good question. I don't know. I'm still learning all that stuff, but I do remember looking over at him in the middle of that and like thinking, this is his absolute Super Bowl right now. Like,
oh,
he's so stoked. Yeah. but I did have the thought, like, okay, don't step on it. Don't step on it. Let him do his thing. But I don't know that there's like an unwritten rule or something. I actually think it at some point it'd be fun to purposefully do that, just step on it for a minute, you know, to see what he does. But I don't know.
you may never be seen or heard from again.
Yeah. And they'll have the Italian mob get me or something like that.
with this team through three games, 3-0, which is sweet, certainly an imperfect team at this stage, like any team. They've conceded first in every game. Like there is almost a, we're feeling ourselves out, we get bit, then we go in for the kill.
Right.
And we've come out on top every time. As you mentioned last segment, we can't do that for 82. That's gonna hurt us in the long term. But, you know, imperfect aspects of this team, conceding first every game. I think they've allowed 4 power play goals through 3 games. What are things as you look forward to, not only Saturday, it's back-to-back. I believe it's Anaheim Saturday, Nashville Sunday. What are things that you're looking for them to even build on more so into the second weekend, I should say?
Yeah, no, I think they're kind of playing the script of Floyd Mayweather. They're on the counterpunch right now, and he was all right with it. But again, I don't think that they want to ride that out. You're right. Some of the special teams, you come in, you've got 3 new faces on the back end. The decor is the staple of your club for a long time.
I mean, right? Fiala's begging for penalty kill minutes. If every time he gets those minutes, they're scoring a goal, like, come on, Kevin.
We're going to have to switch something up. But I think it's more than that. I mean, the penalty kill, it's a unit. They've all got to be on the same page. They got to make the reads, and sometimes you got to find some chemistry there, get the right timing, know the right responsibilities. And flipping that decor out, you got 3 new faces. They can all kill penalties. There's a little tiny nuance to each situation you get in. They have the exhibition games, and you do your best to pound that and get all those little details figured out. But sometimes it takes time. I think, you know, the kill right now, you're looking at an okay last game for sure. There's a little bit too much space in the middle of it, and the Jets found it. And without Wheeler, Shifley on the far side, kind of invisible over there, they should have had more success than they did for sure. But the Jets power play figured it out. I think you can look at those and say one or two of those maybe could have been stopped. Yeah, they found their way in the net. It's a dangerous spot from the center of the ice, but they could have been stopped, right? So you look at it as a whole and you say, okay, this isn't on anybody. This is a group, and we can get better there. So I think they're going to for sure have to shore up the kill. I mean, you're not going to want to be chasing that. On the flip side, I think you're right. Offensively, they've just kind of got to get an attack mentality. And they're sitting around waiting a little bit. I think they find a new gear when they fall behind. Got to find a way to get that gear when the puck drops.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no question about that. But one thing that they've done well is, and last year they did it too, is beating the teams that they should beat, taking care of business. You've got Anaheim coming in, Nashville. I don't know how Nashville's going to be. They've had some changeover too. Goaltender was good last year, but it's a different club. But I think it's a club that the Wild should beat. So you don't want to look to Sunday yet, circle the Anaheim game and say, all right, let's find a way to make it an easy game for ourselves. Like I said, it's a back-to-back situation. It's not like last year, too, in the back-to-back situations where you're playing the same team. So you're both fighting the fatigue battle together. Now you might have a fresh Nashville team coming in, right? And you played the night before, and that's going to change. So now you have to maybe flip or change your game script a little bit too. All right, like, hey, let's make it easy on ourselves. We should beat the Ducks. Let's go out. Let's put 4 up, 5 up, shut them down, and then we'll play Sunday, right? I don't think you want to look past that, but I think you want to have that confidence and that mentality that you can do that. Like, let's go out there, steamroll these guys. We should. We're the better club. Let's go do it.
At times last year with Cam Talbot, and then Talbot just kind of, he ran away with the race, but there was a moment where it's like, wow, look at Kakkonen. I mean, he went on this stretch and gaudy stats earlier on in the season, and kind of the trend with Kakkonen is as the season goes on, he kind of drifts off a little bit, whether it's just age, not used to playing 82 games, whatever it is. But I like the tandem. What's your level of confidence after what we saw from Talbot in the playoffs, leading up to the playoffs a year ago, with him being your number one into Mr. Kakkonen?
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to love the way the crease is set up right now. Talbot, I think he wants the crease. He's not a selfish guy, so he's not going to be like, I want to play 70, you know. But I think he would happily play 70. He takes care of his body, does all the right things. I think he's got a good mentality. And a perfect example is the Jets game, right? Like, he didn't play well, and he lets them in that he probably should have stopped. But after each one, he has the ability to reset and reset. All of a sudden, his team bails him out. The empty net goal doesn't count. They tie it up, goes to OT, makes one big save. Boom, he sends them off the other direction. They win the game. And he might have had the biggest fist pump out there. And it was cool to watch. You look at that, the team split in half. There's a hat trick OT winner, Erickson Ek. Half the bench goes to him. Other half the bench goes to Talbot. Like, they recognize that save matters, man. Like, you stuck in it. Fantastic. And I think that's what you want from your number one, right? And that's something that Talbot, I think, can teach Kakinen. Hey, the game's not over, right?
Right.
And stick with it. But I do also think if you look at Talbot historically, the more he's played, the better he's been. So if it's a rotation 1-2, and I don't know that the Wild know, how's it going to be if we rotate every other? They don't know. But what they know is, based on his history, that he wants the net, and the more he plays, the better he is. So I think he's going to be like a number one, despite the age and everything else, and Kakinen may be the number two and the next guy to take the net. And yeah, you want him seeing pucks in some rubber, right? But hey, Bill Guerin said this in his opening meeting too. We are here to win. And if Cam Talbot gives them a better chance every night, he's the guy, right? They're going to play him. And yeah, you're going to have to sit there and wait maybe a little bit, Kakinen, but when it's your chance, you're going to be the guy, and we're going to expect you to win. So I do
be
think,
ready, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a comfortable situation for them. All the confidence in the world in Talbot. Good rebound. Long, I mean, he's got the history of it. So, yeah, it's a solid crease, and they have to be happy with it.
What has gone into the overtime quality of this team increasing so exponentially over the last 18 months or so? I mean, at one point it was, once you get to OT, just give your opponent a point and just leave. Because one way or another, somebody's going to get caught in, on some sort of 90-second shift. There's going to be some weird odd man rush the other way, and the game's over. And it's just, as soon as it would get to overtime, I hate to say it, I'm a fatalist. I guess at least we got a point.
Right.
Now it's completely different. Now there's speed. Now there's skill. Now there's changing on the fly. Like, it's so much more connected in the 3-on-3, and they're winning more than they're losing. Now they have to be one of the best overtime teams in the National Hockey League. And that changed within a period of maybe 18 months, maybe less.
Yeah. Like,
what goes into that?
I think you have to give a lot of credit to the coach. He changed a lot. Like, listen, it's time to attack. And he changed the personnel. And he puts the guys out there. And, I mean, yes, they've got some players that can do some special things out there with a little bit more room, too, right? Like Kaprizov.
Sure.
And that's what you love about him, is he recognizes it. Like, he fought through the Winnipeg game. It was a battle. But now all of a sudden he knows he's got some ice. And he made the play. Like, the execution, everything on the OT winner, everything went through Kirill. And he knows he stuck with it. Boom, special player. Right? And you see that, and you're like, special player. They didn't necessarily have that in the past. They're good players. I don't know that they had special players that all of a sudden flip a switch, says, okay, I know I'm getting a 2-on-1, and it's a matter of execution now. If I execute this, we win, right? And the confidence that, hey, yeah, I absolutely can easily execute a 2-on-1. I do this every day in practice. Go out on the attack, give them the free rein, boom, and they do it. So I think it's a mentality. It's a certain usage of people. And again, Bill Guerin, they're there to win. They're not sitting back waiting. Give me that draw. Let's get the puck first. Let's go win.
Last thing for you here, and through three games, we have no idea how the rest of the season's going to go. But you know, Ryan Suter's gone. Best of luck to him. Soucy gone via expansion. Those sorts of things. Enter the Alex Goligoskis of the world. I didn't know who Dmitry Kulikov was until like 36 hours ago. Replacing those guys and what we have now, and early on, it feels like there's stability there, if you will, in terms of those new faces performing, at least getting out of them what we need thus far.
Yeah, that 5-6, that third D pair was like, it led the team last year in plus minus, those two guys. That's almost unheard of, right? Like, their job is to shut down defensively. Like,
yeah,
just don't get scored on. Not to be
easy enough.
Yeah, right. Or some, yeah. Actually, not
easy enough.
But to get to a spot where they're plus 21 in 50-something games, like, that was remarkable, right? And I think it kind of went understated at times how valuable those two guys were. And then have them leave and a couple new guys come in. What's that going to look like? What's the transition going to look like? And again, another thing I've learned, or I think we're learning, is that there's a system and a style of play here that's maybe not easy to jump in and do, but that is... It's it's set up for success. These guys come in. It looks good already. Kulikov and John Merrill plus two off the bat, right? They're 5'6 D-man. What you're asking of them is appropriate, and they can handle it, and they can go out and have success doing it. So I think the coaching staff is putting guys in the right spot to have success. But, yeah, no, those guys have – and give them credit. And I think that's why they targeted them too. They're veteran guys. They've been around. Bigger bodies. I think they knew they were going to lose some physicality when they lost Carson Soucy and Ian Cole. So they wanted some bigger guys. I don't think those two dudes are as physical and as mean maybe as Soucy and Ian Cole, but they're still big and they can still win battles out in front of the net. But what I think they lose a little bit in their size and truculence, they pick up in mobility so they can help move the puck a little bit more. That's going to allow the team to play a little bit faster up the ice. So they've jumped in and been great already, three games.
Awesome, man. Thanks for hanging out with me. Excited to see you on TV. Are you doing both games Saturday and Sunday?
Yep. You'll get me back-to-back.
Oh, hell yes.
Let's do it.
Back-to-back for the Wild, back-to-back with Ryan Carter at Ryan_Carter22 via Twitter. You hear him regularly with the Power Trip and hopefully regularly with 9 to noon as well. Bally Sports North, your television home for Minnesota Wild hockey. Have a good one, man.
Thanks, dude. Have a good one.
When we return, we'll hear from Johnny Athletic. The Wolves opened their season at home last night, blew out the Rockets. It's a bad team, but it was a hell of a lot of fun. We're going to chat with John Krasinski about that next. Berkbit, about 20 minutes from now in studio. It's Nordo in for PA, 9 to noon. Here is Paul Gunther in the Vikings Report.
Time now for the Vikings Report on The Fan, presented by Pilot Games. Vikings assistant coach Paul Gunther joins PA after this from Pilot Games, The Fan.
Nine to noon, Nordo in for PA. I just want to jump right into it. John Krasinski of The Athletic at JonKrasinski via Twitter. Follow him at TheAthletic.com. How you doing, Johnny?
Nordo, what's going on, man? I feel like they should have been playing that song like the whole way through the game last night. That was the vibes last night at Target Center.
What a party it was. I mean, this is really, it's an Anthony Edwards love piece. It's Cat's back. He's on a mission. I want to get to all of that. But the vibe last night at Target Center, I couldn't tell. Was it completely sold out? But it looked like a mostly full house. Like, it was awesome.
Yeah, it wasn't sold out. There were certainly big stretches in the end zones of the upper deck that were not sold, but the vibe was great. I mean, there were a lot, you know, the lower bowl was packed in between, on the sidelines, and the upper deck was a good crowd. And, you know, what happened was the Wolves played a really exciting brand of basketball and gave people their money's worth, and it was a lot of fun. So I would imagine that after seeing something like that, and we'll get to all the caveats about Houston being terrible and all of those things, but I think that people who went last night had a really good experience and will probably want to come back again Saturday against the New Orleans Pelicans. Could be pretty fun.
Absolutely. And part of that vibe, new owner Mark Lurie. So A-Rod's off doing baseball stuff. Is Mark Lurie, billionaire, business owner, entrepreneur guy, is he kind of also like a man-child rube like the rest of us? Because I saw Marnie interviewing him on the Bally broadcast, and he was just like any kid ready to jump up and down and lose his mind every time Ant or Cat, D-Lo hitting those threes last night. Like, he's kind of got some rube to him.
He is total rube, Nordo. And I talked to him in the fourth quarter after pretty much everything was, all the doubt was taken away, and I'm telling you, this guy was bouncing off the walls. Like, you could feel just all the excitement coursing through his veins. He was in front of the crowd. I think he got a lot of warm reception from people who saw him and think that he's going to come in and help this franchise kind of turn things around. And oh, by the way, they're up 30 points. And he said to me at one point, he's like, I want to go for 40. Let's get up 40 points. This is unbelievable. And I mean, he was totally rubed out, and it was pretty fun to watch.
Oh my goodness. Ownership meeting the energy of a young team. That's an interesting concept that is a bit foreign to fans of the Howl. Let's just jump into it. Anthony Edwards is a showman. The opportunity now, second year, it's just one game. He's playing in front of a mostly packed house at Target Center. The fans there, ear-to-ear freaking smile while just bawling out. I love the kid.
Yeah, I mean, he's quickly becoming, I think, one of the most popular athletes here in the cities. And, you know, last year, remember, Nordo, he's a rookie, and he's playing on a team that was really struggling. And, oh, by the way, it's the pandemic, so there's no fans in the stands at all. Think about your first introduction to a new community and not being able to connect with anyone. And you could just tell that last night he fed off of a very raucous, very rowdy, very into it crowd. And he's just got that kind of game that sort of, I think, rises a couple of decibels on the meter once the fans are getting into it. But he is also really responsible for getting that decibel meter up, because the fans love to watch him. He gets out in transition. He dunks all over everyone. He hits threes. He tells the opposing coach to call timeouts. Like, he is a showman in every sense of the word. And so I think that, you know, he's going to have this town in the palm of his hand before too long.
You mentioned the Rockets are just terrible, and they're rebuilding. They're paying John Wall, I think, to not play.
Yeah.
Which is weird to think about. I know they're trying to deal him, but regardless, it's a bad team, and you blow out a bad team, so they, you did what you were supposed to do. But pulling, you know, nuggets and things out of this game, what did you think about all of the stuff that we had heard and seen in the preseason about, you know, defensive structure and a commitment to that aspect of things, the starting lineup into the mix last night with Okogie and McDaniels playing significant minutes at times, not supplying any much offensively, but certainly defensively. What did you think of, you know, what we've heard versus what they executed on?
Yeah, so that was the big question going into last night, Nordo, was sort of, you know, they played well in the preseason. They had a good spirit and energy. They were playing good defensively. They were into it in a way that I haven't seen the Timberwolves team be into it in quite a while. And so you're looking at that and you're saying, all right, you know, this is kind of encouraging, but it's the preseason. Like, it doesn't matter. Some of the other teams probably weren't really trying all that hard. So you have to see if that carries over to the regular season when the real bullets are flying. And yes, they were playing the Houston Rockets, who are god awful and are going to be god awful for quite a while. But the defense really did carry over. They were swarming early in the first quarter. They started out the game 2-for-16 from three, Nordo, but it didn't matter because they were playing such good defense. They scored 38 points off of turnovers, which is absurd. They had 31 points in transition, which means they were getting out and running a lot. And so at most everything from the preseason that you were hoping would carry over did carry over. And I think that means a lot to this team. Now, the other part of it that, you know, when people say, well, yeah, it's just the Rockets, remember last March, the same Rockets came into Target Center for a two-game stretch. They had lost 21 of their previous 22 games,
yeah,
and they should have beaten the Wolves in game one, and they tanked it down the stretch, and then they flattened the Wolves in game two. They were up by 34. So what this Timberwolves team has consistently done over the years is play down to their competition and insult their audience by not giving requisite effort. They did not do that last night. They had an inferior opponent, and they just tore them limb from limb.
As we move forward into the season, you can kind of get a peek at how things are going to work, I guess, but it is just one game. Like Beasley getting the most minutes off the bench last night and such. We're working in Taurean Prince. Vanderbilt, I don't think he took a shot in the game, but he had a couple of free throws in the mix here. In terms of the scoring depth, because when you have a lopsided situation like last night where it was Edwards, Towns, and D'Lo, okay, that's great, but that's not going to work every night. How do we feel about a Taurean Prince or a Beasley coming off the bench and providing scoring punch when necessary?
Yeah, I do like the decision to have Beasley as the sixth man, because I just do think he can get hot quickly and can carry an offense when your big guys are not out there. I do think you'll also see Chris Finch try very hard to always have at least one of D'Lo, Russell, and Edwards out there at all times in the game, except for garbage time. And so that will help things as well. But yeah, I do think that overall the offense from the bench is going to be something to watch, because last night, D'Lo Edwards and Towns were still in the game and with like 8 minutes to go, and they're up 30 points. Well, the reason was they came out of the game and it got down to like 14 points and got a little bit tighter in the last few minutes. I think that they're going to struggle to score a little bit until they kind of figure things out a little bit more. Maybe they get a little bit more from Naz Reid. Maybe they get a little bit more from Prince in a shooting element of it. But that's going to be one issue. I think the other one that's big, Nordo, last night they played the Rockets, and they're about the only team in the NBA that is smaller than the Timberwolves. And the Timberwolves did a really good job on the glass and dominated them, did not let them get second chances, really did well. But they're going to be facing much, much bigger, stronger, burlier front courts going forward here. Jonas Valanciunas this weekend against the Pelicans, and more Giannis against the Bucks and things like that. That's where you're really going to get a test of, can these guys hold up on the glass and not just get completely dominated there?
Couple more for you. John Krasinski of The Athletic, theathletic.com. Read his stories on all things NBA and Wolves-centric, including his piece from last night's game. And you mentioned with whether it's bench play, it's the scoring aspect of it. He was suspended for one game. I think it was something based on the playoffs. And I can't remember what the stupid-ass thing that he did last year
Chris
in the playoffs.
He shoved Chris Paul.
That's what it was, yes. Patrick Beverley, and how do you see him intermingling in it? It's not like he did anything wrong in a blowout win, but McLaughlin's got some to me. He's a guy, and he deserves to be on a roster, and he's on ours. But now Beverley into the mix, maybe mixing him where he's on the court with Russell or at the same time. How do you see that figuring into the equation this weekend and beyond?
Yeah, another silver lining for sure, Nordo, from last night was they played such great defense without maybe their best defensive player in Patrick Beverley. And Beverley not only brings defense, but he brings kind of an intensity, an intention to detail. He has been lauded by everyone on the roster, unprompted, with the leadership that he has brought to the team. So when he was not there and they were still able to play as intensely as they did last night, I think that's a good sign. But yes, when they get him back, you get another kind of pit bull defender on the perimeter to go with the Okogie and McDaniels. You get a guy who can hit open threes. He's a 40% three-point shooter, catch and shoot guy. So that can give you a little more spacing. Maybe that helps the second unit scoring a little bit. And it just gives Finch another kind of matchup to sprinkle in there with, you can play him with Russell. You can play him with Beasley in the second unit. You can do kind of a lot of different things with him. And so I do think like that's, when they play better teams coming up here, they're going to have to be a heck of a lot tougher. And Patrick Beverley is a really tough dude. And so they're going to welcome him back.
Yeah. Last thing for you I think similarly, just kind of talking about the Minnesota Wild over the last couple of days, the ability to start fast, right? There's a confidence building aspect to it, beating the teams you're supposed to beat, but specifically with this younger group, the connectivity and the chemistry you build in games and opportunities where you can just blow out a team, I think that means something as you move forward. So back-to-back with the Pelicans, after the Rockets, there's no Zion in the mix. It's basically, I saw a bit of the Sixers game last night, and Sixers ran past them, but Ingram and Alexander Walker, Nikhil, the guard, it's kind of a two-man show for them. This is a good opportunity for this team, even with Valanciunas, you mentioned, a bigger guy inside, a bigger presence there, to maybe run it up a bit and to build on something before they face Milwaukee next week.
Yeah, I really think, Nordo, that this team should be trying to go 3-0 here in this stretch. And don't settle is what should happen here, because in the years past, this team has been too immature to handle even a tiny little bit of success. So, they would win a game like they did against the Rockets on Wednesday night and then come out and lay an egg because they got a little overconfident because they started feeling themselves. They can't do that here. In the Western Conference, when you're going to be figuring that you're going to be in the running for that play-in tournament somewhere 7, 8, 9, 10, that you have to kind of win the games that are put in front of you that you should win. And so they should pick up these next two against the Pelicans without Zion and just kind of start to, if you really want to show that you're different, it doesn't mean you go to Milwaukee and you win, but you take care of these guys and you don't mess around with them the way that they have in years past. And so I think if you see this team respond to this victory, to this tiny little bit of success with some really emphatic performances against an undermanned New Orleans team that they match up well with, then I can think you can start to get a little bit optimistic about where they're going. It's obviously way too early to be making any grand conclusions yet, but I really do want to see how they respond on Saturday and on Monday against the team they should beat.
I love it, man. Thanks for all you do and your work with Barrero and 9 to Noon. You're the best. Keep writing amazing stuff, and we'll chat again soon.
Thanks, Nordahl. I'll talk to you soon, man.
John Krasinski, TheAthletic.com, at JonKrawczynski via Twitter. Follow him and follow this Wolves team, who have a very good chance of going 3-0. Cat was unbelievable last night. Need him to be on a mission. It's kind of like managing mood swings sometimes with the 9 to Noon host. Like, we need to find that level plane so he can just continue to be the force he is. Ant's unbelievable. Oh, so much fun. And we got Finch in the mix. I mean, just, it's almost like you're trying to will this team to take a massive step with the talent that they have. And health's a big part of it, getting Pat Bev back. But go 3-0. Beat up on the Pelicans, and then you go face the champs. That'll be the first cool test of the year for them. I think that's next Thursday-ish, somewhere in there. Anyway, thanks to John Krasinski for joining. 2 hours to go, 9 to noon, 651 Carpet Studio. Ryan Burns, Gophers Illustrated. He'll be in studio around 11, looking back at the victory over Nebraska. How in the hell were they favored against the Gophers this last weekend? Looking forward to Tungavailoa and in Maryland, and the Terps coming to town this Saturday afternoon on your home for Gophers football, the Fan. That's at 11. But next, the Burke Bit, weekly Burke Bit, Matt Burke in studio. It's Nordahl for PA.